Good morning and welcome to Sportin' Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wigard. Sam, you're looking well, and despite the crutch and the new hip.
I am, Leon. I'm glad you noticed, because it's palpable now, because I was struggling a tad, you know, some time ago, but now I've got a bit more energy, a bit more life, a bit more colour in my face.
Yep.
And tell you something else that gives me a bit of inspiration is joining you with Sport and Life.
Well,
you know, one of our great podcasts that's been listened to people as far away as Stawell.
A lot of people at Stawell. I was up there for the 125th anniversary of the starting of the club. And a lot of people up there listen to this program. How they, I bugger if I know how.
Well, with sophisticated weaponry now, because of all the social media outlets now, TikTok and Dan, what are the others?
Spotify.
Instagram. Twitter, Spotify, YouTube. Instagram, YouTube.
Yep.
YouTube, BigTube, Larry, all that.
Anyway, I was quite surprised up there.
And you know one of the reasons they listen?
Why is that?
And this is one of your initiatives. Really, do I give you a rap? But it's the caliber of guest that we have, Leon, which makes it interesting to the listener.
Well, that's the whole point
of it. Today, I believe, is no exception.
It is not. We've got The Voice. Craig Willis joining us now from Channel 7, Channel 10, 3AW.
3AW is football.
Craig Willis, good morning to you, old son.
Morning, Leon, and a very good morning to you, Sam, up here in Mansfield, known as the King of Kyala.
King of Kyala, yes.
Oh, I thought you were the cowboy.
Well, you don't see the commercials all over Victoria. Probably they're on they're broadcast in Stawell, Leon, I'm led to believe. But he presents a great figure as he strolls through the streets of some estate in Kyala, posing the question, it has a zoo, there's a golf course, and he sits in the paddock feasting on a single sausage. It is magnificent television. Anyway, it's good to catch up with you too, Blake.
It's an epiphany, my dear friend. And might I add, just as an aside, you've found some very wonderful green pastures at Mansfield. It's not a a place that, you know, you wouldn't accept immediately if someone was to give you that as your new residence.
It is a magnificent part of Victoria. I look out the back door and I say to my partner, Donna, I say, do you realise at the bottom of that mountain, the King of England went to school? And all former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Boris Johnson, taught at Mount Timbertop for a year. And Tony Blair's mate from university was the chaplain at Timbertop. And we see Mount Timbertop from my back door.
Ah, well, there, that is a...
Now, what else do you see when you're looking out your back door? What sort of crop or cattle?
Well, actually, we've just arrived up from Melbourne, and my mate Terry has been here to cut the grass for the hay. So he'll no doubt turn up this afternoon to rake the hay, and then he'll bale it, and then I'll get on the tractor and I'll move it and put it in a position where I'm able to access it to feed the beasts.
Now, before you became a grazier...
Collins Street one, I might add. Where did you acquire all this agricultural lingo?
No, let's go right back to the start. I know a bit about Craig Willis. I've known him for about 40 years. But, Craig, the connection with Canberra is pretty
Canberra's
important.
Canberra's one of my first radio stations, Leon. I started in Lithgow and went to Lithgow. If they ever gave the earth an enema, that's where you do it. And from there to Tamworth. And I ended up in Canberra, and I was just turned over 19, I think I was, and was 2CA, was the only commercial station in Canberra in those days, at 64 Northbourne Avenue. And it was a fabulous station to work at. John Kerr was the leading announcer. He was formerly of TUE in Sydney. Music in the Minards Manor, a fellow called Brian Minards, Terry Campbell, Tony Campbell, the race caller, was there. And it was a station that did everything because it had to. As I said, the only commercial station in Canberra, which was a city of over 200,000 people in those days.
Now, when did you go to Christmas Island?
That was when I was in Canberra. The lady that next door to the radio station in Northbourne Avenue was the Greyhound bus terminal. Oh. And it was run by a lady called Pat Stinson. And her husband, I love this name of this government department. I don't think it exists anymore. It was called the Department of the Special Minister of State. And
that's Dan Andrews' department.
Say again?
Dan Andrews' department.
Well, that's very true. Keep going there, Kicker. Anyway, her husband worked at this department. Anyway, they were looking for a relief announcer on Christmas Island, and I was single, and the boss at the time at 2CA said, well, Craig might be interested, and they had a chat to me, and next thing I'm on a plane to Perth, and next thing I'm on a plane to Cocos Island, Cocos Keeling Islands, and then to Christmas Island. So I spent about 4 months over there.
And the experience?
Different. In those days, it was still a phosphate mine. So it's 52 square miles of bird shit, a Chinese community and a Malay community, though they were separated, a number of engineers, mostly Scottish and English. There's no beaches to speak of, but I was there for the red crab migration, which takes place in December, one of the great natural wonders of the world. Where the crabs come out of the jungle and they go down to the water, and then the boys come down and do their business, and then the little crabs all come running back up the road, and it is quite an amazing sight to see. And we used to go to Singapore for the weekend. Used to fly with Rangoon Air Charter from Christmas Island to Singapore just for the weekend. It was like $50 return in those days.
Big nader, Rangoon, did you say?
Rangoon Airs, straight to Boogie Street.
That aircraft that we used to go in, reputedly, was the first aircraft Elvis Presley ever owned.
Oh, gets better and better, this.
The very plane,
apparently. I don't know how true that was. We usually imbibed in a couple of Tiger beers by the time we got on board the aircraft, and had plenty in Singapore. We can't remember much about the trip.
When did you make the move down to the Big Smoke of Melbourne?
That was when I was enticed to come down. I was at 2GB in Sydney to work at the Greater 3UZ,
where
I first met you, of course. So when I came down here, Tony Barber was doing the breakfast show. He'd just been signed up. Bert Newton was doing the morning show. In the afternoons was Sean Cosgrove and Martha Gardner. Peter James and Ugly Dave Gray were doing the drive shift. George Danes, I think, and then I ended up starting on Midnight to Dawn. And then, of course, I spent quite some time with Father Gerard Dowling, who sadly passed away only a couple of weeks
recently,
back.
Craig, you were also in the middle of one of the great radio argy-bargies. At the time, from memory, you started off with Darren Hinch, I think half a century ago. And of course, the voice on the big voice on the our airwaves was Bert Newton, and I remember vividly that little argy-bargy because Darren Hinch, a Kiwi, as brazen as he was, came out and he said, "I'm going to take over the airwaves of Melbourne, and I'm going to knock off Bert Newton," which was, you know, you can imagine how that was well received by the loyal Melbourne community, but he did.
He did, but there was one other fellow that did that before he did. And you'd remember him. He was a great broadcaster. And another quick story. Greg Evans lives down the road from me. Greg's at Bonnie Doon.
I work with Greg.
Yeah, well, you know Greg very well. And he was at 2KA Katoomba, which is next door to Lithgow in New South Wales. Keith McGowan was Greg. And Keith McGowan was on 3MP. And he knocked off Bert Newton.
Did he? Keith McGowan, because he did Midnight to Dawn on AW for eons.
He did. But
and
the
I,
other
did,
story,
I did. Greg Evans and I did breakfast on 3AK, known then, for a couple of years, and then with Jane Holmes I did it.
Yes, and Jane, of course, has just retired.
Just
after
retired.
16 and a half years with Neil Mitchell.
They used to have their Christmas party in a phone box.
Who's that? 3AK?
We did. The other story about Keith was on the Grainville train when it hit the overhead bridge in Sydney. One of our great sad train disasters. Keith was on that actual train. But he smoked a pipe and he was in the last carriage on the train. That's why he survived.
Now, was Keith McGowan with Jackie Clancy? Was that the double? Who was Jackie?
Not in my time.
Who was Jackie Clancy's partner?
Graham Kennedy.
No. Jackie Clancy, do you remember him?
I remember, English bloke,
long hair, famous for getting thrown off the air about a week for saying, "Oh, I'm late today because I was driving around Albert Park Lake and I drove into the lake and I was pulled out by the balls. And I'd like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Ball very much." And he got 2 weeks for that, I think.
The great Ward Pally Austin in Sydney, who said, "Girls, you want something hot, red and throbbing between your legs, buy a Honda motorbike."
Yes.
Times have changed.
That was the story. Nearly 6 years working with Darren. We're still very good mates. Never had a cross word in that time that I was with him. So, and he turns 80 in February next year, would you believe?
And ironically enough, you've almost done a full 360, even in retirement. They've dragged you back, the Golden Voice, to fill in after back on 3AW over the summer period.
Well, sadly not this summer. I've got a number of other duties at the moment, so still doing all the footy stuff, which I enjoy. And I enjoy that association with 3AW, which, as Leon said, I've known Leon for over 40 years now, and the 3AW Association goes, it will be 40 years because the day I started with Darren was in the January. His 40th birthday was in the February that year. He had the party at the Underground nightclub. Remember Brian Goldsmith?
Remember
a kicker. You were a regular. Yeah. You were a gold badge holder there. And I had to turn up for work at 6:30 the next morning, and Ince was still in the office from the party, still in his dinner suit. And I thought, oh, this will be good on air. And he went on air at 8:30, and you wouldn't have known he'd had a huge night, you can imagine. Right, we're all going out to lunch. Off we went to the flower trouble.
Yeah, amazing.
No, in those days it was always at the Golden Gate.
That's right, the Golden Gate in South Melbourne.
He had a permanent table there.
Barry Carter ran the pub.
Jamesy was with him all the time.
Yep.
He had his little entourage, and it was the place in Melbourne.
That's exactly right. And yet Phil Pond still does a lot of work with Darren. She was one of his advisors when he went into the Senate. But they were the good old days, you know. When you went out to lunch, Leon, you went from 1 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Yes. Now, something similar between Bert Newton and Darren Hinch. They all like to have the seat in a corner looking out.
That's right.
So that no one could come up from behind them and surprise them or whatever. That was one of their little things.
It is incredible.
I think they got that from watching too many Godfather films.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, illusions of grandeur.
How about the move from radio to television?
Well, that was instrumented by a great friend of ours, Gordon Bennett, who at the time was sort of 2IC of Seven Sport with Gary Fenton. And Gordy said, "You know, come and do a few things with us." And that was a long association over nearly 20 years. Which was great. You get to work with people of the caliber of Bruce McAvaney, of course Rex Hunt with the Rex Hunt Footy Show, but working on all the footy things over the years. Worked at the golf with Graham Rowland and people like that. So there was a terrific, and Gordy was always a great guiding force, and I still see Gordon, and had a chat to him just the other week. Always ring him before Christmas to see how he and Davina are getting on.
Yes, he's a great man, Gordon Bennett, and does a great job for our Vang Sang Club.
He does, yes.
Now, the tennis, covering that for so many years and covering all those difficult-to-pronounce names, does that come naturally to you, or did you have to do it in some special way?
Well, the trick was that if you weren't sure, you just went and asked. And usually the men's side of things is run by the ATP, the women's side of things is run by the WTA, and they have people you just go and say, you've got this new player. Can you just clarify how I pronounce the name? And they might say, look, we don't know yet. In which case, they would take you to meet the player and you would sit down with them and say, can I just check? I want to make sure I get your name right. And they knew that their name was probably difficult, especially from the Eastern Bloc countries, Russia and Moldavia and places like that. But we Australianised the name. So we go back to Martina Navratilova. Her name is actually pronounced Navratilova. But we say Navratilova because we're here in Australia.
Anglicised it.
So the names that we would use here are probably not the way it would be pronounced back in their native country. But 9 times out of 10, you've got it right. The only time that I thought I'd done something wrong was Marat Safin. He played in the semi-final at Melbourne one night. You'd remember it. He had the girl that came down the stairs and everyone was looking at her. Mm-hmm. He stopped at the end of the match. He lost and he stopped right in front of me. I thought, God, he's going to hit me here. And he just said, Craig, thanks very much. Great introductions over years. And walked off. Never saw him again.
Ah. Craig, the art of voiceovers, which you're the doyen of, is that a natural? I mean, to say you got to have voice inflictions and that. Is that something you practiced or just a natural?
It just came, Sam. To be honest, I don't know where it came from. I tell the story about there was a fellow in Sydney who was renowned as a voice coach, if you like. And he had this sort of, not like a Gary Mack style radio school, but I think he was more interested in training people for the ABC, where back in those days you did have to have a very proper voice to work on the Australian Broadcasting Commission. I can't remember his name now, but I rang him and said I'd be interested perhaps in getting some voice coaching. And he said to me over the phone, dear boy, I can tell already that you have no hope in this industry.
He's a good judge.
I felt like ringing up 20 years later, but I probably he'd passed on by that stage.
Craig, I might ask you, I always remember the great John Laws. John Laws, you know, the golden voice of radio. He stated specifically, he said, everyone is glued to my voice. He said, I hate my voice. He said, I can't stand listening to my voice. What about yourself? Do you enjoy your voice or?
Well, it's funny. I was the office boy, or cadet, as they called me in those days, for John Laws at 2UW in Sydney. And he was virtually the one that got me my start. He sent off a tape unbeknown to me to the manager of 2LT Lithgow and said, give this kid a go. We were at a function the other day and somebody said to Donna, oh, I could listen to Craig's voice all day. And she looked at this nice lady as if she had two heads. She said, yes, I have to.
Hey,
and
Craig,
then I get that
Craig.
Look and then I know to shut up. You know, to be honest, Leon and Sam, I don't really think about it that much. But the other funny thing is that people assume because you've got a good speaking voice that you can sing.
Ooh.
I can't hold a note.
I've never heard that one.
If you speak nicely and strongly and all that, they imagine that you're going to have a voice like Placido Domingo.
No, I can understand that. I reckon I'd think that people have a good voice, could sing.
Well, whenever I chance to meet some old friends on the street, I wonder how does a man get to be
an idol? Well, I can see.
Dear, hey, Craig. Craig, talking about pronunciation, were you with me on 3UZ when we had a player on from Croatia, and everybody got his name fresh into Australia? You've got to remember this.
Goran Ivanisevic.
He's the guy now, and I said, "Thanks for breaking the story for us." But I said to him, I'm sorry, could you explain how you pronounce your name? We'd like to get it right. But I did it on air, which is a bit silly. He said, Ivan Isevich.
Wasn't really.
Ivan Isevich.
I just fucked it out of the air.
He was the one.
He was the one. Got him.
Well,
see, it's easy for me because of my best record.
But I remember, in closing, Leon, your best line, which I still quote to people. Sam, you'll love this one. We were interviewing a bloke about rifle shooting, and it was small bore rifle shooting. And Leon's first question was, what do you do when all the little pigs run out? I've never forgotten that one. It was an absolute classic. Well done.
No, neither. I think the legal matters are still pending.
Forearmed is forewarned.
Forearmed.
Now, how about the Olympics? You did a couple of Olympics.
I've been lucky to go to five.
Well, I said a couple. I suppose a couple more than a couple.
Atlanta with Channel 7 and in Sydney, Beijing, Athens and Rio doing all the tennis announcing. But, Sydney was – it's interesting. I interviewed somebody recently at Alliance function, Leon, who's on the organising committee for Brisbane, and she was waxing lyrical about, you know, all the facilities. And I said, have you actually been to an Olympic game? Oh, no, but I know all about it. I said, ah. I said, the only place in the world where the remnants of an Olympic Games are still being utilised properly is Sydney. I said, everything else, like Athens, is just a complete mess.
Yeah.
Beijing, okay, the stadium's still there. Rio, oh, God, it was an absolute shambles. So all the infrastructure they put in for the Olympics, the minute the Olympics finish, turned to shit, basically. Oh, do they? Yes, I said, so you want to be careful. Sydney was a very quick story. At the Olympics in those days, you had an English announcer and a French announcer. And we had a girl from SBS who was the producer. She had no idea. And the French lady who was doing the French announcing was bigger than you and I put together, Kekka. And she loved a Gaulois. So she'd be ducking off downstairs to have a cigarette. Anyway, one day, the athletes, players, were coming out, and the French lady wasn't there. And the producer girl from SBS was having conniptions. She said, what are we going to do? I said, don't worry. Madame et monsieur, bienvenue les athlètes. Madame et monsieur, bienvenue. Le ramasseur de balle et le juge de ligne. Ladies and gentlemen, the athletes. Ladies and gentlemen, the technical officials and ball boys. And then they opened the doors and the French lady was able to get back up the stairs. And the girl said to me, I didn't know you speak French. I said, well, I did it at school, but I've been sitting here for 4 days listening to the same script over and over again. It's not exactly rocket science.
Now, Craig, you think...
myself, I thought, Ramasseur de Balle and the Juge de Ligne. I thought, I like that.
Sois en neuf.
Thank you very
just
much.
Just a quick one, Craig. You're the consummate professional, but like all humans, we're not infallible. The biggest gaffe? I don't tell
you know
me.
What? I don't think I can really think of one.
Oh, give it some thought.
Yeah, okay. There was a change of court one day with a player came on I'd never heard of, and I had no background on him, and his name was Dmitry Turzanov. He was actually a Russian-born, but he'd spent most of his time at the Volunteer Tennis Camp in the United States. And I called him Turzanov instead of Turzanov. And as he walked off the court, he stopped and he looked at me and said, hey, man, one day you'll get it right. And I said, see ya, because he'd lost the match. I never saw him again.
I remember that name, Turzanov.
I always pride myself on being prepared, and I never had a major cock-up.
Well, Craig, for a long, long time, you have been our voice of, you know, all sporting, particularly on, you know, on the television. Did you leave off your own volition? I mean, to say the AFL and all Channel 7, or did you ultimately have enough, or would you have liked to have continued?
Oh, I think I'd had enough, Sam. You know, people say it's, you know, look, it is a glamorous job, but there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with it, and the whole situation of the tennis and football has changed now, where it's run by smart young things who know everything, and oh, I'd had enough after nearly 30 years, and I was happy just to a few things in my life had changed, and I decided that...
pack up your caravan and drift off in the sunset.
Yeah, and I just didn't think that, you know, I wanted to spend the rest of my life, you know, just being... You know, doing that, travelling around. The travelling got to me after a while, I've got to be quite honest. But, you know, and I had the farm and I thought, you know, I'd rather come and spend some time with myself. And now I've done it in my life and that's the way it is.
Did you Were you a genuine sporting lover? Did you love sport?
Yeah, to be honest, Sam, I grew up in Sydney. I went to the King's School of Parramatta. Rugby union was my game.
Yes.
Yeah, played it a lot as a younger man. And I went to Wagga for a while and worked there. And you wouldn't believe it, some of my oldest friends have come from playing rugby. And I still enjoy watching good rugby, hosting dinners for the rugby union, et cetera. And things like that. So that's probably my main love of sport, followed by tennis. Both my parents were good tennis players, and I played when I was, again, a lot younger. And when I came to Melbourne, I just fell in love with watching the AFL and with my mighty Brisbane Lions. Thank you to Leon getting me involved with Fitzroy all those years ago.
Craig, it's been a great career for you, and I suppose people ask you highlights, but does something stand out that you're so pleased that you were involved with?
Probably at the tennis when Roger Federer gave me a hug after he decided to retire and said, thank you for everything, mate. And I thought, that made it all worthwhile.
Did he give you a cow?
He gave me a Rolex. No, he didn't.
That's not a bad endorsement, is it?
Donald's hairdresser's just arrived, so Rex the Wonder Dog is just going off his tree out there.
Well, let's take it to him. Craig, thanks.
Fantastic.
Great pleasure having you with us on Sport and Life, and Sam will send you a couple of bottles of
Mitchell and Wines, who kindly sponsor us. Jerry Ryan is a great friend of yours. You know Jerry from Mitchell and Wines, who look after our program here. Jerry's a great friend of ours, and next time we catch up, mate, there's a couple of nice bottles of grape there for you.
I shall look forward to it. Thank you, Sam, and thank you, Leon. I really enjoy it.
Craig Willis with us on Sport and Life.